ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Just put it on HDMI 3 and run it from the closet. Put it on HDMI 3.
Yeah, just go to source, put it on HDMI 3 and run it from the closet. Three. Now. And then just wake up the computer. Okay, we're beginning a new chapter. We're in the ninth canto, which is entitled Liberation. As we know, many times we've gone over this verse from the second canto, which lists the 10 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I always tell the brahmacharis they have to learn it. But I'm not going to test you right now. I'll remind you again, though, you should learn that verse. Atra sarga visargascha stanam poshanam utaya manvantarisha anakata nirodha muktir ashraya. So now we're in mukti, liberation, the ninth canto. And we're beginning a new chapter, chapter 14 entitled King Puru Rava, enchanted by Urvashi. It's kind of important to try to pronounce the words properly again. Most of us, we grew up in this country saying Puru Rava, but that's not the right pronunciation. As you can see, there are some diacritics there, so it's Puru Rava. Okay, so King Puru Rava, enchanted by Urvashi. The summary of this 14th chapter is given as follows. This chapter describes Soma and how he kidnapped the wife of Brihaspati and begot in her womb a son named Buddha. Buddha begot Puru Rava, who begot 6 sons, headed by Ayu, in the womb of Urvashi. Lord Brahma was born from the lotus that sprouted from the navel of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. Brahma had a son named Atri, and Atri's son was Soma, the king of all drugs and stars. Soma became the conqueror of the entire universe, and being inflated with pride, he kidnapped Tara, who was the wife of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods. A great fight ensued between the demigods and the asuras, but Brahma rescued Brihaspati's wife from the clutches of Soma and returned her to her husband, thus stopping the fighting. In the womb of Tara, Soma begot a son named Buddha, who later begot in the womb of Ila a son named Ayla, or Puru Rava. Urvashi was captivated by Puru Rava's beauty, and therefore she lived with him for some time. But when she left his company, he became almost like a madman. While traveling all over the world, he met Urvashi again at Kurukshetra, but she agreed to join with him for only one night in a year. One year later, Puru Rava saw Urvashi at Kurukshetra and was glad to be with her for one night. But when he thought of her leaving him again, he was overwhelmed by grief. Urvashi then advised Puru Rava to worship the Gandharvas. Being satisfied with Puru Rava, the Gandharvas gave him a woman known as Agnishtali. Puru Rava mistook Agnishtali for Urvashi. But while he was wandering in the forest, his misunderstanding was cleared, and he immediately gave up her company. After returning home and meditating upon Urvashi all night, he wanted to perform a Vedic ritualistic ceremony to satisfy his desire. Thereafter, he went to the same place where he had left Agnishtali, and there he saw that from the womb of a Shami tree had come an Ashwatha tree. Puru Rava made 2 sticks from this tree and thus produced a fire. By such a fire, one can satisfy all lusty desires. The fire was considered the son of Puru Rava. In Satyayuga, there was only one social division called Hamsa. There were no divisions of Varna like Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. The Veda was the Omkara. The various demigods were not worshipped, for only the Supreme Personality of Godhead was the worshipable deity. So just in this chapter summary, there's so much far out information. At this point in the Bhagavatam, first of all, we know that Pariksit Maharaj was given only 7 days to live. So I'm not sure exactly which day we're in, whether it's day four or five, because there's still a lot to come. The entire 10th canto, which is very, very long, then the 11th canto and the 12th canto. So I'm not sure exactly which day we're in, but up to this point, up to the 9th canto, Shukadeva Goswami has transmitted a lot of knowledge. A lot of knowledge. Based on the needs of Pariksit Maharaj, which was to be ready to face death, he could have stopped back in the 2nd canto, because he gave him the formula, what to do, how to think. There's that verse, I think it's 2:16, Etavan Sankhyokabhya, Sadharma Parinishtaya, Janmalava Parakpungsham, Ante Narayana Smritihi. So this is the key right there. Etavan Sankhya Yogabhyam. Whether you study Sankhya, the distinction between matter and spirit, yoga, mystic powers, or Swadharma Parinishtaya, you become perfect in your own dharma, as a Brahmana, Chacha, Vaishashuddha, whatever. The whole goal of all that is Ante Narayana Smriti, to remember the Lord at the last moment. So you could have stopped there. But being a perfect student, Pariksit Maharaj was extremely inquisitive. He wanted to know about so many things. So now, by the time we've gone to the 9th canto, Pariksit Maharaj has answered a lot of his questions and he's given him a lot of information. Shukadeva Goswami has given Pariksit a lot of information. It's really mind-boggling how much Shukadeva Goswami remembers, because he's not reading from a book here. He's reciting verbatim what he heard from Vyasadeva. A few verses later in that first chapter of the second canto, he says that. Idam Bhagavatam Nama Puranam Brahma Samhitam. He says that at the end of the Dwapara Yuga, I heard this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a supplementary Vedic literature, from the great sage, my father, Dvaipayana Vyasadeva. So he heard it, and he remembered the whole thing. And he's giving, we've just heard a list of the names of the dynasty coming from the sun. Now we're going to hear about the list of the kings coming from the dynasty of the moon. And again, he's not reading this from some paper, some crib notes somewhere. He remembers all of this. So this alone is fascinating. Because in Kali Yuga, our memories are so short that to have darshan of somebody with this kind of memory, it's mind-boggling. Still, in this age, there are some people who have what they call photographic memory. I remember I grew up in New York City, and there was one former player for the New York Knicks who was famous as having a photographic memory. And to prove it, he memorized like huge chunks of the Manhattan phone book. So he could, not just the names, but also their phone numbers. So he could tell you, you can imagine how many John Smiths there are in the Manhattan phone book. But he could go down page after page of John Smith with the right phone number, But what is the use of that? To remember John Smith at the end of your life, maybe you'll come back as a human being again. But the whole point is to remember Krishna. So Shukadeva Goswami, he's meditating on Krishna. He remembers everything that he's heard from his father and he's reciting. So now we're going to do, the first verse doesn't have a purport. I'll read that and then the second verse we'll recite responsibly. So text one. Shishuko vaja atatak shriyatam rajan vankshak somasya pavanaha yasmin ayaladayo bhupa kirtyante punankirtayaha. Srila Prabhupada's translation. Srila Shukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj Pariksit, O King, thus far you have heard the description of the dynasty of the sun god. Now hear the most glorious and purifying description of the dynasty of the moon god. This description mentions kings like Ayla, Pururava, of whom it is glorious to hear. So text 2 doesn't have a purport either. Sahasra Sirsak Pungso Nabi Hriyos Sororuhat Jatasya Sit Satod Hatur Atrik Pitri Samogunai. Lord Vishnu, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, is also known as Sahasra Shirsha Purusha. Where do we know that from? Yeah, that's the beginning of the Purusha Shukta. Sahasra Shirsha Purusha Sahasra Sahasrapat. Sahasra means thousands, so he has thousands of arms, eyes, legs like that. That's how it starts out. From the lake of his navel sprang a lotus on which Lord Brahma was generated. Atri, the son of Lord Brahma, was as qualified as his father. this is the one with the purport. Tasya Brigbyo Abhavat Putraha Samo Amritamayaha Kila Vipravoshadi Udu Gananam Brahmana Kalpitaha Patihi Tasya Drigbo Bhavat Putra Somo Mritamaya Kila Viprosha Juduganam Brahmana Kalpitak Patihi Tasya Drigbhyo Bhavat Putra Somo Mritamaya Kila Viprosha Juduganam Brahmana Kalpitak Patihi Tasya Drigbhyo Bhavat Putra Somo Mritamaya Kila Viprosha Juduganam Brahmana Kalpitak Patihi. Please chant. Tasya Drigbhyo Bhavat Putra Samo Mritamaya Kila Vibhosha Judhu Gananam Brahmana Kalpitak Patihi Tasya Drigbhyo Bhavat Putra Samo Mritamaya Kila Riposha Judu Kananam Brahmana Kalpitak Patihi Tasya Drigbhyo Bhavat Putra Somo Mritamaya Kila Riposha Judu Kananam Brahmana Kalpitak Patihi Vaishnavins. Tasya Drigbhyo Bhavat Putra Tasya Drigbhyo Bhavat Putra Somo Mritamaya Kila Viprosha Dudu Gananam Brahmana Kalpitak Patihi Tasya Drigbhyo Bhavat Putra Somo Mritamaya Kila Viprosha Dudu Gananam Brahmana Kalpitak Patihi. So the word meanings, Tasya of him, Atri the son of Brahma, Drigbhyaha from the tears of jubilation from the eyes, Abhavat was born, Putraha a son, Somaha the moon god, Amritamayaha, full of soothing rays. Kila, indeed. Vipra, of the brahmanas. Oshadhi, of the drugs. Uduganam, and of the luminaries. Brahmana, by Lord Brahma, called Pitaha, was appointed or designated. Patihi, the Supreme Director. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. From Atri's tears of jubilation was born a son named Soma, the moon, who was full of soothing rays. Lord Brahma appointed him the director of the brahmanas, drugs, and luminaries. Please repeat. From Atri's tears of jubilation was born a son named Soma, the moon, who was full of soothing rays. Lord Brahma appointed him the director of the brahmanas, drugs, and luminaries. Srila Prabhupada's purport. According to the Vedic description, Soma, the moon god, was born from the mind of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chandrama Manaso Jataha. But here we find that Soma was born from the tears in the eyes of Atri. This appears contradictory to the Vedic information. But actually it is not, for this birth of the moon is understood to have taken place in another millennium. When tears appear in the eyes because of jubilation, the tears are soothing. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Drigbhya ananda shubhya ata eva mritamamaya. Quote, here the word drigbhyaha means from tears of jubilation. Therefore, the moon god is called amritamayaha, full of soothing rays. End of quote. In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we find this verse. Atre patnya siyatrin yagye suyasa suyashasak sutan tattam durva sasang somam atmesha brahmasambhavan. This verse describes that Anasuya, the wife of Atri Rishi, bore three sons, Soma, Durvasa, and Dattatreya. It is said that at the time of conception, Anasuya was impregnated by the tears of Atri. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tanamine. Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pracharine, Nirvichesa Sunivadi Pasyatade Shatarine. Om Agyana Timarandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishnang Stapitang Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishavangscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raganatan Vatam Tang Sajivam Shadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shiva Shakanvatangsha. Hey Krishna Karana Sindo Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindabaneshri Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancho Kopaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhuve Evacha Patitanang Pathanevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dittananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's not surprising that in the material world, because we're conditioned souls, people are not even aware of the fact that, or understand clearly that there is a soul, that the soul exists. Many people say they do, but they think that they are a body that, and they have a soul inside the body, instead of that they are the soul inhabiting the material body. But again, it's not surprising. There are two broad categories of existence. There's the conditioned existence and the unconditioned or the free spiritual existence. And conditioned souls, as we know, they suffer from four basic defects. The first defect is the tendency to make mistakes. Just like I made a mistake this morning, last night actually. After coming back from Harinam, I was very fired. It was a really nice Harinam. I made a short video if you want to see it. It's on YouTube and on Facebook. Not that many devotees, but very, very high energy. And Radharani and Rukmini were doing like a Garba, good imitation of a Garba dance. They had the sticks and they were, and it was very attractive. People were attracted to it. They were coming over to see. So getting back, I was reading a little bit in preparation for today's class, and so I went to bed about around 12:30, which is normal for me, unfortunately, but that's my normal bedtime. and set the alarm. I have one of those alarms that you set by two stages. First you set the time, then you have to turn it on. So I set the time, 4:08, but I didn't turn it on. So instead of waking up at 4:08, I woke up at 5:08, and it was like, oh my God. So we have a tendency to make mistakes. And we're subject to illusion. Illusion means accepting something for what it's not. Accepting something for something other than what it really is. The classic example is accepting a rope for a snake. Or a snake for a rope. Either one is not a good mistake. One could be an embarrassment. You think a rope is a snake and you go, that's just an embarrassing mistake. But the other one can be deadly if you think a snake is a rope. And you may think, who could? But actually there are some snakes, very venomous snakes, that look like ropes. There's one in Australia especially called it. I forget what the name of it, but it looks like a very braided rope. It's a long brown snake. And if you make a mistake of trying to pick that up as a rope, you're going to die. Because they're one of the 10 most venomous snakes in the world. So we have a tendency to make mistakes. We're subject to illusion. We have a cheating propensity. In spite of the fact that we make mistakes and we're subject to illusion, still we like to present whatever we think as knowledge. This is a so-called scientific viewpoint nowadays, the ascending path of knowledge we were discussing on Sunday. They postulate something, and even though it's not proven, they present it as knowledge and you have to accept it. An example that I used on Sunday was Mars. For many years they were teaching in science that there was no water on Mars, that couldn't exist there. It's too close to the sun, and so many reasons they gave. But now, lo and behold, now they're saying, oops, you know, our Mars explorer is showing that there are ice fields there, and that means there's water on Mars. And if there's water on Mars, there's maybe some life there, even though we've been telling you for many, many decades that there is no life on Mars. So like this, this is cheating. I don't really know something, but I present as if I know it. And then they'll tell you, well this is how we learn. But the point is, as proper to say, they're not even gentlemen. They're postulating and putting forward their theories, but they immediately exclude any other theory as being possible, especially the God theory. They don't want to hear that. You wait until we figure it out, and then we'll tell you how things really are. But we are not so foolish, Prabhupada would say. We don't wait for their rubber stamp. We accept knowledge coming down from perfect personalities like Shukadeva Goswami. He's giving perfect knowledge to Pariksit Maharaj. So we're hearing. Now we're going to hear about the descendants of the moon. And who's the most famous descendant of the moon? Krishna. And which of the two Vamsas did Lord Chaitanya appear in? Did he also appear in the dynasty of the moon? Or did he appear in the dynasty of the sun? Lord Chaitanya, I'm asking. We know that Lord Rama appeared in the dynasty of the sun. We already heard about that lineage. Now we're hearing about the dynasty of the moon. And Lord Krishna is the most famous descendant of the moon. That's why the moon was very happy when Krishna appeared. Janmashtami, the eighth day of the moon, it's not exactly full moon, but when Krishna appeared, he was so jubilant, he appeared to be full. So I'm asking, Lord Chaitanya, which of those two does he appear in? Yes, he appears in the moon dynasty. There was an eclipse of the moon when he appeared, and therefore everybody was out and taking bath, as is the custom in Hindu society those days. So, the point again is that Shukadeva Goswami is giving us this information from memory. He's not reading from a book, which is very fascinating, that he can recite verbatim all the names of all these kings, on and on and on. We can't remember them the next day after reading them the previous day. But he remembers all of these names and their sons and their accomplishments, achievements. And I think the closest we have in ISKCON is Pushkar Prabhu. If you know Pushkar, he amazes me. He knows practically the names of all his god brothers and god sisters, their sons, their grandsons, which school they went to. Have a conversation with Pushkar, just goes on and on and on, because he's got such a good memory for that kind of thing. So the importance again of this section is to remind us that the Bhagavatam is not ordinary. It's not ordinary literature. The personalities described here are not ordinary. And the narrator, in this case, Shukadeva Goswami, is not an ordinary person. So we should try to imbibe this knowledge as it is presented and give it to others. This is what the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, one of the purposes, is for us to come together, appreciate this knowledge, and give it to others. While I was with the Harinam party last night, I was trying to do a few books. So I gave an SSR to a young man and asked him what he did. I said, are you a student or a professor? I learned that from Bhrigu. It gets them to laugh right away. No, I'm not. Because whatever they say, you tell them, you ask them, are you a good one? If they say they're a businessman, you say, are you a good one? And they immediately are amused by that. But this young man, he actually is a parking lot attendant right here in Culver City. And the first thing he said to me, he said, you know, I really appreciate you people. I appreciate the way you dress. You look so cool. He said, not like these guys. And he pointed down the block. You know, on the promenade, there's always somebody doing some dance or some music or something. So he pointed, he said, not like those guys over there. They're still like, eh. He said, I really like you people. I like the way you dress and I like your chanting. And he was very, very impressed with that. So just to remind us, again, that we dress like this as Prabhupada requested. We want to stand out. We don't want to blend in with the common people. We don't want to blend in. But even if we have to, circumstantially, like there was this conversation Prabhupada had with Mukunda Maharaj. Actually, Mukunda Maharaj was with another devotee, with Prabhupada, and this devotee was dressed in suit and tie. This was in London, because he had to go and do some government papers or something like that. And so he was dressed in a suit and tie, and that's when Prabhupada made that statement, first dress, then address. Prabhupada appreciated it. He looked very neat, but he was wearing tilak and flag. So Prabhupada said, yes, if necessary, you can dress in Western clothes for preaching or whatever, but you should have tilak and flag. So, and the point is to interact with the public in a way that we have something to give them. We're not out there begging for money for our sustenance. We're out there to give them transcendental knowledge. But in order to give transcendental knowledge in an efficient and effective way, we have to appreciate that knowledge ourselves. If we don't appreciate this Bhagavad presentation, we don't try our best to imbibe it, to remember it, then we're not appreciating Srila Prabhupada, because this was the sum and substance of his hard work. The fruit of his hard work was this Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and the other books that he gave us. And there's always something new to learn. Just like it dawned on me recently that Mother Yashoda was actually shown the universal form twice. At the end of that chapter, I forget now, is that chapter 10 or 11, where Trinavarta comes and he picks Krishna up and he takes him in the sky. And the demon rose high into the sky, but I always remember that caption, but the child assumed such a weight that he could not go any further and he had to stop his whirlwind activities. It's one of the great captions in Krishna book. So he took Krishna high up in the sky, but Krishna became so heavy that he couldn't go any further and he had to stop his whirlwind activities, and then he came crashing down to earth. So then the gopis came, and then he was given to Mother Yashoda, and she was so happy. She was overflowing with maternal affection. And she opened his mouth to try to breastfeed him, and then she saw in Krishna's mouth the universal manifestation. She saw everything there. So all the luminaries and the planets and the sky, everything was there in Krishna's mouth, and she was bewildered. She was bewildered. And then Krishna again expanded his yoga maya to cover up. And then in the very next chapter is when the boys complain about Krishna eating dirt, and Krishna says to Mother Yashoda, if you don't believe me, look in my mouth. And so she looks in his mouth again. And again she sees the universal form. And she sees herself. And so again she's bewildered. So the point is, because sometimes, you know, neophytes, they don't like Bhagavad Gita, it's, you know, universal form and all this. What does that have to do with pure love? No. Even the residents of Vrindavan are shown the universal form. This is not just something ghastly that you see on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Mother Yashoda saw it twice. Who else saw the universal form? Who else saw the universal form in Vrindavan? Vidura. Vidura? Is that what you said? Or did you say Akrura? Yes, Akrura. When Akrura came to get Krishna and Balaram to take them to Mathura, while he was chanting his Gayatri in Yamuna, he saw universal form. So the universal form is not just something that's shown to Arjuna on the battlefield. It's also revealed to the intimate devotees in the Vrindavan setting. Again, quite often neophyte devotees, they make the mistake of jumping to Gopi Leela, Krishna with the gopis, and that's all they want to concentrate on. But this was not Prabhupada's mood, it's not the mood of the predecessor Acharyas, it's not Lord Chaitanya's mood. The mood of the Acharyas is you learn the philosophy thoroughly. Sambandha, and then apply it practically in your life, Abhideya, and then the Prayojana, the love of God, that will be there. And we learn, try to learn and recite the Vedic literature nicely. It's meant to be sung, actually. And we know from practical experience in Western culture that it's so easy to remember things when you learn them as songs, isn't it? Any one of us, in an instant, you can remember so many silly songs that you've learned in your life, that you've heard. It's because when you sing something, it has a tendency to sink in. So the Vedic literature is meant to be sung. Unfortunately, in the West, we sing songs that, for instance, there are a lot of love songs, and there's one song in particular where they say the greatest love is to learn to love yourself. Learning to love yourself is the greatest love of all. No, it's not. Learning to love the Supreme Self, Krishna, that is the greatest love of all. So this is what ultimately we're meant to come to, that point of reawakening that love that's there dormant in the heart. But in order to get there, we have to put in the hard work. There's work required to do anything in this world, whether you want to be the president or start a company or even just to be a street sweeper. It means hard work. But some or other, when people come to the spiritual path, they think it should be easy. It is, yes, it is easy. It has been made easy. Just chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. But even that requires some effort. You have to open your mouth. You have to move your tongue. It requires some effort. Everything requires some effort. But in Kali Yuga, we're so lazy. We're so lazy. Even just to open the mouth is difficult. Even just to open the mouth and move the tongue is difficult. So what can be done? But again, Krishna consciousness is so nice that even if you don't have a tongue, there was one young man that joined in Japan, and because of some birth defect, he couldn't speak. But he came across the devotees, he was attracted, he became a devotee, and he wanted to know, how am I going to chant my own? So he was told, just chant in your mind. Just chant in your mind. Which is bona fide. We know from Haridas Thakur, Namacharya, he would chant one-third of his rounds, you chanted 3 lakhs every day, so 1 lakh he would chant out loud. The second lakh he would chant within the mouth, just like we chant Gayatri. It's not meant to be tight-lipped. Prabhupada showed him personally. You chant within the mouth. In other words, you voice the words, you just don't hear them externally. But you're supposed to say the words. You're supposed to say the words in the mouth. So Haridas Thakur would chant the second lakh within the mouth. And then the third lack would be in the mind. So chanting in the mind is bona fide. But chant we must. Chant we must. There is no progress practically in spiritual life without chanting Hare Krishna. So we can stop here if there are any questions, comments on any of these points. Rabindranath Prabhu.
Where is that specifically mentioned that Haridas Thakur would chant, one third of his rounds out loud and the other in his mind and like that?
I heard it from Prabhupada. I don't know if it's exactly where it's written. I can do some research and give that to you.
Okay. Yeah, because somebody just asked me about it before,
yeah.
And I just
I'll find the exact reference for you. Yes, Satchitanoi Prabhu.
Prabhu, would you like to explain a little bit more about? In the reading, you were mentioning that it was mentioned that in this particular Satya Yuga, there was no Kshatriyas, there was no sudras, and there was no worship.
He didn't say in this particular Satya Yoga. He just says in Satya Yoga there's only one class, Hamsa.
Well, that's what I meant to say. In which Satya Yoga was? In which one?
Prabhupada seems to make it a general statement. He's not saying that in the one that just preceded. He said in Satya Yoga, in general, there's only one class, Hamsa. Means that everybody is religious. Everybody is spiritually progressive. So there was no need to divide society into different classes because there was just one class. Human beings who were spiritually progressive. But as time progresses, you know, the finer sentiments deteriorate until we get to Kali Yuga, where practically there is no spiritual sentiment left. Or if there is any interest at all, it's just sentimental. It's not deep spiritual interest. Just for instance, initiation. Prabhupada said, generally speaking, in the Veda culture, the spiritual master sits down in one place, and those who are interested and qualified and who are looking for a spiritual master, they approach and ask to be initiated. But he said, in this age, nobody is genuinely interested in spiritual knowledge, therefore the spiritual master has to travel and beg, please chant Hare Krishna. You see? So in this age, practically there is no class left. And there may be rubber stamp Brahmana Charya, but there is no class because there is no training. So in Satya Yuga, there is one class, Hamsa. And in Kali Yuga, even if there are titles existing, there is no class. It's all, you know, low class. So the spiritual master has to go out and canvas, please chant Hare Krishna, please read Bhagavad Gita as it is, and make some spiritual progress. Anything else? Okay, Granth Sarav Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai.